God, grant me the strength to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Is there anyone here tonight in their first 30 days of sobriety? We'd just like to welcome you by first name. Anybody in their first 30 days of sobriety? Shout it out. What's your name? Candace, welcome.
I'm Allison. I'm in my first 30 days.
Allison. Terry?
Terry.
Terry. Welcome. Anybody else? I'm feeling like three more. Anybody in their last 30 days? At this time, please silence your cell phones. I'm going to do that right now myself because I'll be that guy. I will. There we go. Boom. Please silence your cell phones. Said that. Also, we respectfully ask those present to please refrain from any unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen to the speaker uninterrupted. The foreword of the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. For them, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentication will be necessary. We think this account of our experiences will better help everyone to understand the alcoholic. Many do not comprehend that the alcoholic is a very sick person. And besides, we are sure that our way of living has its advantages for all. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA's simple actions. The format of this meeting normally, see, you guys are here on a good night. Well, they're all good nights. Seriously. But normally it's an open big book step study. Basically, if you come back next week, we'll have a panel with two speakers and a home group member will chair it. And we'll read a few paragraphs out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then the panel of two speakers will share on step one. And then next week we'll have maybe the same person chairing, but two new speakers. And we take about 13 weeks to go through the all 12 steps out of the big book with different speakers each week. And then on the 14th week, we party, and that's where we are tonight. So come back next week. We'll be doing step one. And let's see. I am not going to take up any more of, I do want to say that we first met Jack during COVID. He was recommended to come, and he and his lovely wife came on the little Zoom screen, and we all just fell in love with both of them. Just fantastic. They're obviously a strong couple. They obviously love each other, but they're also both obviously in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. They're helping other people. We did have Cleo, his wife, come and share, I think, two suppers and speakers ago. And so I don't want to take up any more of Jack's time. He's come all the way from Baltimore, Maryland to tell his story. And I give you Jack D. Want you to share.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Oof. My heart is full. My heart is full. I just hope that you guys can see you guys the way that I see you guys right now. It's pretty incredible. My name is Jack. I'm an alcoholic. And I'll live a life way better than anything I ever thought I'd see. And rooms like this make it so clear to a guy like me. Thank you all so much for being so nice to my wife when she was so scared and alone. And thank you, Jason, for being kind when you picked her up and making it clear that you were just picking her up and bringing her here. It's a room full of people that I've never met that are saying my wife's name to me with love in their eyes. From where I've come and who I've been, both before and after drinking, it's just incredible that that's what has happened so far this evening, and to reconnect with some of you folks and see Morgan and meet some of you, see some of you guys for the first time in person after, it's just, I'm really grateful to be here, but I had to thank you for the way you treated my wife. My sobriety date's August 19th, 2012. I got a home group. It's the Firing Line Group. We meet in the northern part of Baltimore City every Tuesday night, 7 p.m. If you ever want to travel 4 or 5 hours north, come see us and I'll buy you your dinner at the diner because we go to this diner afterwards every week and it's half diner food, half Indian food. And the waiter that serves us every Tuesday night was invited to the man's wedding that I requested an extension to stay out of federal prison for to officiate his wedding because he's become such a part of our life. Life's a trip, man. A's hilarious. There's nowhere else I belong. I want to speak with a red solo cup more often. this is just, I just feel, I told Morgan, I said, I just feel right at home, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're good. I'm here because I have alcoholism. That sounds cool and it looks fun. It's got a tie on, it came from a faraway land. But it's here because it has an illness that if it doesn't take actions to access power that I don't have, I will drink again, period. And I never wanted to see that truth. So I did a lot of other stuff around here for a while. And as a result of coming to see that truth through a lot of pain, I ended up having an experience that's something that I just never even saw coming. I mean, I just, and I'm not, I got a long way to go. I'm not here to talk about it. I've arrived somewhere. I've gotten something. I'm on a ride and I'm about it. I'm with it and I'm enjoying it. And it's gotten really weird and really scary, but it's really wonderful. And it's become incredibly useful almost immediately every time. There's pain and fear. If I turn, depending on which way I turn into the power, it almost immediately becomes useful. And that is a way of living I didn't know existed. I didn't realize that the pain and the stuff that I'd done and the people that I'd hurt and the hearts that I'd broken, I didn't realize it was actually going to become useful. I thought some of you said stuff like that to try to keep young people here. You know what I'm saying? Like, I thought you were just like, like it's okay. You won't be as sad later on. It'll be useful. It's like I didn't even know what that meant. And words really aren't the deal in AA for me. They're not. I'm gonna say them for the next 52 minutes, which is kind of funny. Ha ha. But my feet, right? Actions. This is an action. I take actions to access power I don't have. And that power performs things in my life that, I didn't sign up for. And one of which is having a home group in Maryland. So, wasn't planning on going back to Baltimore, that's for sure. Nowhere we'd rather be. And my wife is from a very beautiful part of this country, and she has found more beauty in this weird little city where we live now. With a little useful life and some people to help and a company that she's been able to become a part of, and all at the hands of me being arrested by the Federal Bureau of Investigation when I was 6 or 7 years sober. Like what has happened as a result of some of the more scarier and weird things in my life is just awesome. So, but I'm here because I have alcoholism, and I'm by the time I met a drink, I needed a drink. You know, I don't know that everybody felt that way, but like by the time and I found a drink at like a 12, you know, it had been rough for a while already, you know. I exist in a way that I can't voice. I don't know that I need relief from just waking up and what it's like to sit in a chair with someone in the front of a room, apparently getting paid to tell me what to do all day long. I just like school, and I was just like, what? Like, I just, by the end of the day, I just like, oh my, you know, like, I don't ever want to go back there again. What are we like? I didn't. Now, had at that time you given me a fifth of Jack Daniels, school probably would have been a ball. You know what I mean? I don't know about you, but I've, you know, walking through the cafeteria, hitting on the lunch ladies, making more friends than anyone in the world. Like, but I don't know. I don't know that, you know, and I know kids probably are uncomfortable in school. But my experience is when I finally found alcohol, that which I felt like I'd existed with my whole life up to that point seemed to magically vanish. Somehow it was just poof gone. You know, I drank Cuervo and Jack Daniels, and it was like, you know, why haven't I been doing this? Let's do it again. You know, like let's, it was never let's sacrifice everything for this. Thought never entered my mind. I want to become the guy that I've always said my whole life I'm never going to be. No way. This is exactly what happened to me because I have an abnormal physical reaction. You guys are going to talk about next week, but we're going to talk about it tonight too, because fortunately I'm a speaker with alcoholism here. You know, it's really good that I have that, you know. It'd be pretty weird if I came all this way just to tell some funny story that, you know, like that'd be a little bit much, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I probably would have come for Jill's cheesecake, just to be honest. You know what I mean? But and that Korean chicken. But anyway, when I start drinking, I can't stop. But when I meet a drink, like I'm the kid in second grade who goes, I went to recess late. I went to recess and I stayed out late one day with my friend. Okay. I'm in second grade. All right. I'm coming back to school and I turn around to my friend and I begin to explain to him what we're going to do when we get back to school. And we're going to explain to the principal that we were accosted by two men and held at knife point, and that's why we're late. Just because we don't want to, I'm just that scared already of getting in trouble. I don't even want, I'm just like, no, this is what we'll say. This is what we'll do. This was a tattoo on his hand. This is what it smelled like just ba 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 on the just on the way up the stairs. And before I know it, we're in the school. There's Baltimore City police detectives showing up to interview us about these people, you know, that held us at knife point. For what? Like, I think back, like, for what? For my, like literally my milk. I was in second grade. Just cause, you know? Anyway, they never separated us when they interrogated us. Probably because they didn't think we were lying at that point, which is very nice of them because we were in second grade. But anyway, it'd be like, oh, that's kind of weird, you know, but the story doesn't end there. Because I don't let things end like that. You know, I go home and I bring the story into my family's house and I sleep in my parents' bed for like a month or two because I'm so scared of what happened to me at school. Right, you're tracking now. It never happened. Right, exactly. Yes, no, it didn't. But now it did almost, you know, like you're almost can convince you, like, I don't know, like kind of feels like it did, you know? And my brother went to private school up the street, and I really wanted to go to private school. And now I had the perfect way to get to private school. And by the beginning of third grade, I was at private school because I wasn't safe there anymore. Fast forward, however, 20 years or whatever. I'm at my first AA anniversary before I really went through the steps and woke up. I tell that story. My mother, sitting like all of you, jumps out of her chair and says, "You did what?" Because I was so asleep that I'd been a year sober and never touched the amends process. I never even told them that. But I just want to say it to be funny. This is also me when I show up to AA. This is me then, and then there I am again. You know, it's just like that might have been alarming to some. You know what I mean? I was probably a couple people in that room like, oh, but a lot of people thought it was funny. I don't know. Looking back, like it's not. It's funny now. You know, but it's a little weird. Missed a couple things, Jack. Maybe just maybe. So that kid that's willing to lie that much and wrote like, man, when you gave me out, when you gave me something to get relief from a little brain that can move that fast and a chest that was that tight and an experience in the world that was that uncomfortable, I loved it. And it was not just, oh, I got drunk and I have a little bit of fun and then the allergy started to form. It was like, lit my life, the entire trajectory of my life changed. Now, that's not everyone's experience, and it's important to know that. That's not, it doesn't, you know, the first time you drink, you get the allergy, and but that's not a requirement, but it is what happened to this guy. You know, like there was never a time again after that day where I said, you know what? I think I'm gonna stop drinking now after we've started. Never one, I never was just like, no, actually, I think, you know, no, unless I was so inebriated that I like literally couldn't. You know what I mean? Like I'm falling over, I'm on 19 other things, and it's like, you don't really need to drink, do you, buddy? No, I can't barely. So anyway, like I just point being, once it went in me, there was no stopping me. And I never wanted to stop, you know? And it's a really scary way to be when you're 13. Or whatever. And 15, it's a scary way to be, period, but it's really scary for your family, for your parents, when like all of a sudden you just start staying away from your house for 5, 7, 9, 10, 13 days in a row, calling and just using the voicemail system at the time on the house phone that I could call into and leave a voicemail without having to call and have the phone ring, just leaving mom a voicemail, letting her know I was okay, but I wasn't coming home. And I didn't have the words like, mom, I can't come home. Home equals sober. Out here equals not. This equation's really simple. I didn't have the words. I didn't have those words. I didn't know. I just knew something inside of me knew deep, deep down that something had been activated. Something happened. Something was going on. And, you know, by 16, I'm in my first institution, and it's a year and a half long therapeutic emotional growth boarding school. You know what I mean? And this is not a program of emotional growth. I'm not saying we don't grow emotionally here, but I talked a lot about my emotions for 18 months in a row. And by the time I got out of there, I was convinced I wasn't going to drink, and I needed a drink worse than I had needed one in a long time at that point in life. I was very overconsumed. I was, man, we had done a lot of talking about me, and it was about time to just shut everything up for a while. And I was gonna wait 40 days or something, and then I couldn't. And I, you know, I go to college. My parents refinance their house to send me to this place and attempt to help me get on track. And I get into college after going there because the class size was 4 or whatever, and you couldn't leave. So there was really no choice. And I get to college, and within 6 weeks of me getting dropped off, and there's hope, and it's back, and just, you know, I'm getting picked up from the same dorm. They're keeping my parents' money. You know, I'm getting kicked out. I can't ever do anything, man. I can't. While I'm drinking, I get a little bits of hope and a piece of this, and then wham, and then a little bit, and then it's just the same look from mom again, same look from mom again, and the same look from dad again. Brothers are flying home from Boston, and they're coming home from the Outer Banks, and they're trying to find this little kid who looks like he's 9 running around, you know, this city that has a reputation for not being a place for a little 9-year-old looking kid to be running around alone, drinking Steel Reserve or doing whatever I was doing. You know what I mean? Just, not that I didn't love Steel Reserve, but I, you know, eventually, if you drink like that and you're like me, there will come a time where it gets really bad. And I finally start talking about not doing it anymore. But I mean, I had to, like, I robbed my family, you know, I mean, I mortgage checks were bouncing, you know, jewelry was missing. My father's mother's money was getting taken because I'm a check forger. You know, like I'm all over the place. You don't want me near anything that's good. I had an uncle that died in 2005. with over 20 years sober. And I have another uncle that got sober not that long around that same time period. And when I finally reached out for help, my uncle, that's now been sober almost 30 years, I think, came up and sat with me on my front porch and asked me a couple questions. And the next day, he was helping me get into a place to get physically separated and have a shot at actually getting physically sober so that then I could get exposed to a message about what I was going to actually have to do to stay that way if I had what he had, which he was pretty clear I did. He didn't have a lot of questions. Right, as you already don't either. Exactly. Thank you all. I know. I wish I could just pull it off, you know, but it's not. I mean, that's just, and it's been that obvious my whole life. Dude's wound a little funny. Guy's a little weird, moves a little quick, something's a little off, you know, like we're pretty clear why he may have, you know, gotten himself in some trouble and maybe really liked the effects produced by all kinds of stuff, but definitely a half a fifth of Jack. That can just settle me down, but also put me on top of a vehicle. You know what I mean? Like it put me in control, but also pass me out. You know, I'll take either one. Just not in this moment as I am. Please. Anything. I don't care if I hate it. Just give it to me. It's better than this. What's this? I never asked that question when I first got here for years. You know, I could say that. I could think that. It's better than that. What is this that I'm talking about? Just my experience of life? As it is, man. So I end up coming to AA, you know, and yeah, they were super stoked to see me. I was just looking for a girlfriend, you know what I mean? Like, and maybe a sponsor, you know, like, I don't know. That might be cool too. Like, because I want to have an experience, but like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm clear on what I see in the world. I'm not dumb. I was 23, you know, like I went to a place called the Man House. You know, it's like they're like, calm down. It's got two N's. It's named after a woman. She was big in AA. I'm like, all right, good. I'm like, but it's 13 guys, right? They're like, yeah. I'm like, that sounds like the Man House to me. Anyway. And I start doing this stuff and I get a sponsor. And you know, when I would go to meetings and hear people read the promises, I didn't say, hey, you know, I sponsor man, what are they talking about? I don't feel that, and I never have. What is going on, man? Like, I don't know these promises, but what do? I go in a meeting and I share about how they're coming true before I've ever gotten to step nine. Oh, yes, no, they're materializing. Yes. Let me tell you how, as I sit here and just share about what I'm hearing other people say. That's all I could do is just repeat what you said. I didn't have an experience to talk about. And I'm terrified of what you think of me, you know? Most of my experience in that little meeting room, the first couple of years I was there, was me sitting in a chair thinking about the cup of coffee I didn't get because I was scared about the pee I was gonna have to take because the bathroom's in the same room as the meeting room and they're gonna hear me in between the preamble and the steps. And there's no girlfriend in sight if they hear me pee in between the readings. You know what I'm saying? It's all over now. Like this is. And I'd sit there and go, I should have gotten this cup of coffee. Well, I didn't get this cup of coffee. Well, I really should have gotten this cup of coffee. Oh, man, I really should have. But then I have to pee, but you might have to see her. And what if you do if you spill it on him? And oh, my God, you know? And it's like after the meeting, hey, Jack, how was the meeting? That was an incredible message. That was just an incredible message. If I was to be honest, and we would end the sentence with of me thinking about myself for 49 minutes out of the 53 that weren't readings and a prayer. Like, I'm just glad y'all prayed for me. You know what I mean? That's all, yeah, for real. You know, it's like we've done good. You know, I couldn't see it. I couldn't say it. It's not because I didn't want to be here. And I really want to make that clear. Like, I wanted to be sober. At 23 years old, I said, take everything from me and put me in a house with a bunch of dudes for a year that I can't talk to a girl. That's willingness, my people. This is a willing young man. It wasn't quarter, like this was, come on. I could have gone 3 months, 4 months, 5. We went though. Like, I didn't want to be who I'd become. The problem is, I don't have the power to produce that result. And until I see that in all of its entirety, man, I'm in big trouble. And I lasted a little over 2 years. God bless. And the poor girl I dated and a little dog we got. And I just, you know, yeah, girlfriend, promotion, dog, you know, and all of a sudden it's, you know, I'm not sober anymore, and I come back and someone sends me a speaker tape, and someone was finally talking loud enough for me to hear them over my own mind, and that coupled with the truth of what he was saying and the pain of my relapse, somehow the seas of my mind parted long enough for someone to pass it and land in my heart. I believe now that that's what's happened, that someone talked to my heart, and I heard the language of the heart because I heard it somewhere other than the place that always filters incorrectly, that always takes alcoholism and alcoholic and makes it into what I think that means. I heard a guy talking about being forced by his sober condition to get unsober, even though all he wanted to do and had arranged his entire life to do was to be sober, and was going to the place where everyone was talking about being sober and had a sober sponsor and sober friends and a sober whatever. And I said, what are you, that's what just happened to me. What is that? You know, it's like, well, sadly, my young man, that is alcoholism. This is why we have steps. And he went on to explain that, and it'd be really nice if I could stand here one time. I want to just be able to say, and then I just went through the steps and became this principled man and had this wonderful experience with God. But I didn't. I just started yelling and repeating what he said for a while, because that's a lot more fun than actually doing self-searching and actually leveling your pride in the amends process and actually finally becoming useful to other people. I just want to yell about step one, man. And I become the guy in AA you just don't want to be. And I'm not talking about because I'm yelling about step one. I'm talking about everything else that you think about the guy in AA you don't want to be. All of those things, you know, like the stuff that some people joke about. That was funny until it wasn't funny. Until you made amends to the 29th person for it. And the funny just kind of fell out of the bottom. You know, when you become the guy that's getting told you can't come here because of the way you're conducting yourself with new women in our community. You know, when you get the phone call at 3 years sober, hey, man, you want to come to LA and start a company? First thought, what took them so long to call? You know what I'm saying? Next thought, yes. Third thought, maybe I should talk to someone else about this. You know, like maybe like a sponsor. What's that? You know, had one by name who would listen to me, which is a tricky thing. Listen, I'm not here to talk to anybody about who they should have sponsor them, but I need a guy that can see right through me. And I also have to be willing to be sponsored by him. And I just, that was not the case at that point at all. And I had never made a direct amends, and I was just a wreck. I mean, I don't know what I was doing. I was just hanging out in AA with alcoholism, you know, and I end up in California with more stuff than I ever thought I'd see, more things to do and places to go, you know? And every time I was ever in a meeting, it was a way to try to get into some direct message interaction with some young lady. You know, every time I was ever anywhere, I was looking for a girlfriend and I wasn't trying to be a principal boyfriend. You know, anytime I ever, I become this relief seeking just thing, organism that's just like, will you give me validation, you know, for just a sec? And how about you? And what do you think of me? And what about us? And how about you? And where are you going? And money. Then I met money. That was an interesting thing to find. Wow. Hadn't seen that before. And now I'm like, one, two, what? You know, like, I mean, all of a sudden I'm drinking money. I didn't know I could do that. Like, and about 6 months after being out there, I knew internally, you know what? Probably not. It's not really going too well. We were going to help people get into treatment and do it principally and only put them good places. And after about 6 months, stuff started to get weird. The way we're getting paid is getting intense. We're starting to see bigger numbers. And with bigger numbers comes bigger players. And all of a sudden, there's other things coming on the deal. And da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you know. Off Jack goes to the circus. Although it wasn't a circus. Those of you who know who were here, you know, a couple supper and speakers ago, where you got to hear my wife while she was here because I was in prison and she was alone for almost a year of her life because of my selfishness. Anyhow. Eventually, I fall in love with this girl, and I don't want to. She comes into this meeting, and I just remember seeing this human and being like, what are you? Like, fair skin, red hair, bright pants, big Nikes. Like, everyone out in LA looks the same, trying to be whatever. Like, where did you just come? What? And I said, no. It's one of those times where I'm going to manage my conduct here. No. So I waited. I, like, ended up talking, like, the next meeting. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's just... whatever, you know, like I, two guys that had crushes on her invited me to come out to dinner with the three of them after the next meeting I saw her at. I was just like, I mean, okay, whatever. I did. I was just like, and all of a sudden I knew something. All I could say about Cleo for a long time was there's just something very different about her. I didn't know what it was. But I can't stay. I keep leaving. And the last time I left, she got with her sponsor. She took a real honest third step about her whole life, including me in this relationship. And she went into inventory and, she came out and I end up coming back and I call her, and she tells a story way better and probably from a way more, concise and clear perspective than me. But the way I remember the conversation is we're talking and at some point she knows that if she tells me the truth about my life, I'll probably never talk to her again. And at this point, she thinks we're supposed to be married. So what's about to take place is her being willing to sacrifice the actual man that she actually thinks she's supposed to marry. In an effort to be honest with him, because she's afraid that he is going to relapse and die. And so she begins to tell me exactly what was wrong with me, what I was doing that was wrong, et cetera, et cetera. And it wasn't, and if you do this, if you change all these things, then we'll be together. Because in no world did she see that that's what was going to happen, and neither did I. She thought, this is it. This is it. Like, he's not walking away from money, where he lives, the guys he's hanging out with, everything he's doing, all this, everything. There's, he's just going to change his entire life. And because she listened to her own gut and the intuitive voice that was in her and not what some other folks had told her to do, she told me the truth. And the next day, I woke up and I saw, like, I was in the front row of the IMAX. The entirety of my life in that time. And I knew that I was going to have to walk away from 95% of it. And I had no idea what to do. 2 weeks after that, I'm on the phone with the guy that had tried to help me before. He asked me a very interesting question in the middle of our conversation as I'm telling him all of this. He says, "Have you thought about writing inventory on the last couple of years of your life?" No, Mr. Ninja sponsor man, I hadn't thought of that. I'm saying. See, it's just so nice to be coming back to again with the step stuff and the step people. No. And he said, "Well, grab a piece of paper." I said, "Right now?" He said, "Yes, right now while we're on the phone." Okay. Instructions written 2 weeks later on a plane to New Jersey. Halloween weekend, 2018. My life has never been the same. I walked into that hotel room to do that fifth step. He stopped me. If you're not willing to do all of 8 and 9 and actually do what you've never done here, let's not do this. I had just traveled 3,000 miles. He waited till I got there to be like, "Yo, just in case, like, stop me at the door." And also, it's really nice that Cleo came with you, Jack, but that's not what this is about. Whether you guys stay together or not, doesn't matter. You need to focus on one relationship from here on out, or else you're a dead man. That's your relationship with God, period. And to both of those things, I was just like, I mean, I know you're right. It's a sad thought to think that after that, she's gonna, but you're right. Yes, 100%. And yeah, man, I'll make the amends. And by the end of that weekend, I was making my first amends. And you guys know a lot of this story, but my life for the next couple of years, that's what it became. That's all it was. I had saved a bunch of money that I made, lining my pockets with human beings. Just keep it real. Committing healthcare fraud, as the FBI and the United States government versus my freaking name would say, they would say healthcare fraud. They're right. Pled guilty because I am guilty, right? Went to a facility because I deserved to, and have a seven-figure restitution number because that's the type of damage that I do. Carrying a big book the whole time. Trying to sponsor people the whole time, talking about stuff the whole time. Words are real cool, man. Real cool. And also real lame. And very just kind of, once 8 o'clock hits, they're all done. Then what? What's the demonstration out in the world when it really starts to happen, And I got guys that I get to see that help me see the reality of that. When it's really coming down the pike and it's really sad and it's really scary And there's people that really need you that aren't sitting in this room. There's people for the people that are here. Can I then show up where I need to show up? Can I practice principles and all my affairs? And at that point in my life, I didn't have a shot. I didn't have any power to practice principles in the affairs of the present. I never cleaned up the past. I don't know what I thought was going to happen. I was just going to remain with all this garbage in the past from every relationship I'd ever been in, and all of a sudden just treat Cleo well. Not my experience. And on one of these trips, we're going to Maryland, and we made amends in a couple different states on the way down the East Coast. We flew from California to like New York and did a couple things. It was a cool trip. An interesting trip by the end, you know. We're going to go to the Outer Banks with my parents for like the yearly trip, you know, which of course for the last 3 or 4 years, Jack's been paying for, and everyone knew that. Because I just, why do it and not tell everyone, you know? Anyway, like, and I'm in morning meditation, June 25th, 2019, and I get a phone call. And it sounds like some weird scam talking about agents and scary stuff. And I just hung up. And I get a call back, and it's my dad. And I'm like, Dad, what's up? He's like, you're on speakerphone, and there's 9 FBI agents in our living room, son. First call was not a scam. This agent thing is real. And I need to go there. And I was arrested that day and given a piece of paper that, if you've never seen one where it actually says the United States of America versus just your name, that was a weighty moment of just like swallowing and digesting some hard truths of chunks of things about me. I got that entire country. There's a lot to a little. It's also like you managed to get involved in something that actually impacted a healthcare system that impacts more people than you'll ever meet or ever get to tell and be honest about what you did. Little did I know that, you know, it was also going to become one of the more pivotal pieces up until now. And we were on pretrial release that day, you know, and I got released my own reconnaissance, and my mom was at work, thank God, when I got arrested. But, you know, by the time I got arraigned later that afternoon, she had to stay all, my mom, my father, and my then fiance, who had just signed up to get married like a month or two prior, had to watch me, you know, get released and arraigned in ankle shackles and hand shackles. And it was such a trip, because it was like, because everybody already knew everything. Like, I had made amends everywhere. I had been transparent about me walking away from everybody knew everything. So it wasn't like I got arrested and all this came out, and there was shock. There was like, I looked my father in the eye when they were moving my hands around from my back to my front, and was able to have a very brief conversation in his living room about, clearly this was the next piece of this process. And he was able to say, I know, son, I wish it didn't have to be. But it's like, that's where we already were, you know, just. And I think it's, you know, it's not like it was forced on them. He wasn't forced by that event to see the truth of, like, thank God for the people that were here for me and the people that showed me what to do. It's like my whole life, the goodness of my life is just demonstrations of people like you. It's just the power of something working through people like you. And like, and you show me, and I'm finally in a place of reasonableness. Okay. And I do it, and my life gets better. And it gets better, and I get closer, and it gets scary, and it gets hard. But over time, it's like, but I'm getting closer to something that cannot be taken from me. I'm getting closer to something that when I was to go away, you can't put a value on. To see a demonstration of 12-step work in the visitation room of a federal prison facility. Because guys were driving 3, 4, 5, 6 hours one way just to come sit with you and talk about them, because they're clear on what they suffer from, and they know that I'm spending a lot of time on me. You know, they're just coming to tell me about the guys they're working with. Every once in a while asking how I'm doing, but they know, man. I'm trying to keep my head down. You know, I'm trying to stay out of the way, but I'm also trying to be a light. I'm trying to be a man that brings unity and not engage in the amount of disharmony in a place like that. I'm trying to be the guy that everybody can talk to. you know, and I'm trying to show what I can't tell because there's no AA there. So it becomes a walk, a demonstration. I carry this message and use words if you absolutely have to, but only if you have to. And of course, what's up? But you know, half the time I'm just thinking, man, I'm not doing too well. Probably not doing that good. Had to make amends to a guy. I can't believe, you know, and it's like, yo, you're making amends on the wing of a federal prison camp in front of other inmates, bro. Like when I zoom out and look back at that, it's just like, thank you, God, for the opportunity to demonstrate your omnipotence. You know. Now, I was still a scared little 7-year-old, afraid of what everybody was going to think. And I slept like a baby in there. My neck didn't feel so great. You know what I'm saying? And we tried to get a meeting going, you know. And we were meeting a couple times a week for a little while, 3 nights a week. And then a guy from NA came in and he really wanted to meet. And we got together and then he wanted to talk about steps. And we did it, but like nothing ever, nothing. There's not some big, it was the 12-step story from my time in the federal prison camp was of you guys. 12-stepping me. I got letters. I got letters from people I'd met one time. Hey man, just thinking about you, just curious what's going on. I always had mail. It was an 11-step story in there for myself. That's what it was. And a redefining of step 10. Because I'm, you know, showing what it is out of the big book, giving the instructions out of the big book, and I've had incredible fruit from that simple process. But what about when you can't discuss it with anybody? What happens? You know, and there was a shift. There was something that happened. I was very much looking forward to and have taken very much advantage of not having to do that as soon as I got back home. Let me be very clear. You know, but when you can't, what do? You turn and you think and you get up earlier and you spend more time and you turn and you think. And all of a sudden you're sitting there one day right after you get there. And you're reading because when you go in through the gate and they strip you of everything, including, you know, the majority of your pride and have looking at you and staring at you and figuring out what you are or aren't keeping wherever as you walk in. The one thing they let me go in with was the only piece of literature that I was able to grab before I was just a little pocket 12 and 12. The only thing I was able to walk through the gate with, nothing else that I brought with me that day. Try to get the right shoe, nothing. I'm just walking around, just reading that, just walking. And someone said, hey, man, what is that? Is that this book? Is that this book? I said, no, actually, it's a book. I'm like, oh, cool. Whatever. You know, whatever. I'm sitting there one morning, and I'm just going over the St. Francis prayer right out of step 11, going over. And I'm sitting there, and I just start weeping because I'm looking out this weird window into this funny courtyard in this place. And these words are just still as true as they've ever been in that moment. And I was inspired. I went and got on the little desktop computer that you're allowed to communicate with up to 30 people on. And I sent a message out to a bunch of guys. And I said, I want to do this if you're willing to join me. And I want to do a line of this every week. Sounds kind of funny. Anyway, bye bye. One line of the St. Francis prayer. We're going to say it each morning. We're going to think about what it means to us. And at the end, we're going to share with each other our experience and what's happened and really try to focus on and walk that. And like all of a sudden, you know, I'm getting word back. There's just all these people are in the middle of, I cannot be seen. I cannot be seen. And I'm connected to more again, somehow. You do that. How do you do that? You did that for me. You gave that to my wife so that when she came on Sunday, she didn't have to come to meet self-pity in its most intelligent form. You know? No. She met a guy still filled up, just crying to see her. Just couldn't wait. Not because her cheeks are the most incredible thing in the world, or I just wanted to hug her or smell her or touch her, but just because I couldn't. I was still so okay inside. And so many times I wasn't. I didn't walk around there, float, like don't, but just what an experience that, like, again, I think I, you know, you hear people say stuff. I hear people say things and I just like, none of it's real till it happens to me here. It was just like drinking or sex or anything that I've loved in my life. You tell me all about organ. No. Tell me what it's like to be drunk. When I experience it, something changes. The same thing happened with the steps. That's what happened in the amends process. I started going and seeing people and having conversations that a lot of people I know were saying, like, you shouldn't be talking to those people. You don't, that's an entire group of people that you don't talk to. If that's true, I literally am, I am not talking to one. It's an entire gender. I didn't respect them. That feels also, again, now very disrespectful. The consideration of, why don't we give them the dignity of the ability to respond to the approach? If they want time with you to tell you what you did to them, they should be allowed that. And if they don't, they should be allowed the dignity to say whatever they want. And man, were there some interesting responses that came back. Colorful, but 80% said yes. And many said, no one's ever done this. No one from AA's ever done this. And I know it's not, I'm not the only guy to try to date them in AA. Come on. I know. We've known each other for years. And all of a sudden, a trust in God starts to be built, not a reliance on what you think, that no longer, you know, has any substance anywhere except for the beast that I'm literally just here now to starve. That's where that lives, in the one who shall be starved. You know, there's no loving presence of God that's scared about what other humans in AA who also rob their own families think of him. Like, that's just not real. You know what I'm saying? That's not, what is that thing? Starve that thing. Take that, go, see what happens. And all of a sudden, you know, she'll tell you better than me. A new person just entered her life somehow. My sponsor wasn't like super like, I can't believe it. You know, but she and I were. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're moved in, you're married, you're engaged. And then, you know, you go to sentencing and end up at Cumberland. The day of sentencing, you know, there was a 50-person prayer circle in the first floor of that federal courthouse in Trenton, New Jersey, before we went upstairs. There was 49 people from 16 different states, alcoholic and non, in that room that stood up when the lawyer asked people to stand up. That dude came in that room talking about 4 years. I left with a year and a day. Nothing changed except for the demonstration of, again, other people. Other people. Not I, said the fly. You. You, you, you. Thank you, man. Thank you. There's not enough. There's not, the words aren't, they're not there. They're not there. Buy the ticket and take the ride. Have the experience. You know, like that's, I just, I love a good speaker. I'm not saying I am one, but I love a great speaker tape and I love a great story and I love emotion and I love get, like I really do. And I went and listened to them for years and never did what they'd done. So I just wanted to be around them, which is great. Nothing wrong with that. But if you end up in federal prison as a result of that, you may want to investigate. There might be something wrong with, you know what I'm saying? Like, right. Thank you all. I'm glad we're all together here. This is good. This is good. You know, how do you laugh about being in prison? You know what I'm saying? Like just a few months ago. What about when your employer steps up and said, we're going to send all of your checks to your wife the entire time you're gone because we love you. What about that? I mean, it's like, I almost forget that because it's like, we'd have been fine without that. What has happened here cannot be talked about in words that are adequate. It's not possible. I'm literally trying to talk about something that like, it's just, my prayer is that we all remain willing to try to stay close to that which has rescued someone like me from where I've been, brought me here, then watched me spit in its face. Brought me down and then rose me back up. again. Really trying to not do it again now. It's like really trying to walk the street. You know, we're doing our best. You know, like, and then you start to see other people come into your life, you know, and you just kind of wonder, like, how does it become that the guy that was asked not to come to certain AA meetings because of how he was acting with women, that used women, that would put on a coat and tie with a year sober and then just try and hit on the secretary and did. And that's one person that still all these years later will not speak to me in AA, you know? How does that guy become the guy that's asking to stay out of prison because he's been asked to officiate his second wedding of a man that he got to be a part of taking through the steps? How does that happen? Who does that? That answer is all we need to find in We Agnostics. That and just that, even just that, huh? Who would? Yeah, definitely not this guy. Guaranteed. Something that, again, I can't fully explain, but is so, so, so real. And somehow, through history and weird events and a bunch of weird timing, and a process was developed so that any one of us at any time could turn into it, go through it, and have an experience with it. Ah, man, I'm just really fortunate I didn't die before I got here, because there's just a lot of my close friends that did, and I'm not better than them. I love them, you know? And some of their family members will still not talk to me too. It's not fair. It's not fair, you know, that I'm sitting, that I'll be on a train tomorrow going back to Penn Station, you know, where I'll get in a car and I'll drive back to my home that I own, that I purchased on pretrial release. It's hilarious. Why would you even give him a loan? But whatever. And then go to my home group and go early because we're going through the steps. Four guys are getting together, going through the steps together, not leading them through. We're going through the steps together as unified people with varying times of sober. And then I'll be in my home group and I'll go to the diner and I'll go home and I'll sleep in my bed, a free man, you know? And Wednesday night, normally I would go have dinner with my parents at the continuing the retirement community that is 0.6 miles from where our home is now. But they're on a trip because my mom has gotten sick. She had a couple strokes. She had a grandma seizure. She got diagnosed with something called HOD, hypertrophic olivary degeneration. It's a degenerative condition where the brainstem just starts to go. And my dad's just showing me how to be the guy. Still just going down Skyline Drive. Like they're just living life, staying present, turning in with love. Demonstrations are everywhere once I finally wake up. Being home and being here is incredible. Looking at all of you people is incredible. Alcoholics Anonymous is incredible. Alcoholics Anonymous is something you can do when it doesn't really feel like or look like it's around, which was a really cool thing to experience. I'm not looking for that. I love you all. I don't want to leave again. You know, but it was an interesting experience to have, and I feel very fortunate that some people were willing to tell me the truth when it didn't really look like I was willing to listen. And I was really scared. And they were way more worried about telling me the truth because they could see something that was willing inside of me than they were about what the other people who might overhear how they told me the truth viewed them. And for a guy like me who's been trapped in that and not done that, and then had to be at people's funerals where you're hugging their mom, knowing there was a couple things that you didn't say because you were afraid, because you wanted him to like you more than confront him about his alcoholism. Thank God for those guys that show me that. Not that I could have saved the guy, but the reality is it's real easy for me to be in fear and to have demonstration could just thank you, thank you, thank you. And I just hope that, you know, we can continue to try to sit with each other and sit with one another. And Candace and Allison and Carrie, I hope that, you know, there's an experience here that you get to be a part of and have, you know, and it can be a lot of fun too, man, for real. And I just, you know, I'm overwhelmed, and I'm gonna be quiet the same way that I started. Any one of you that was here two meetings ago for this thing, thank you so much for the way that you treated my wife, you know. Thank you very, very much for demonstrating AA like that, because that came all the way back to a federal prison facility through a payphone and through a visit. And it felt so good to know that she had been with you guys while she was alone month after month after month, you know. So thank you all, and thank you for letting me share.
Can you pass the baskets? All right, the seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. I will be happy to take a few announcements for the good of AA. You might want to stand up and shout it if you got one. Hearing none, I'll move on. Last call. Come on. Okay. Half measures not meeting tomorrow.
And if I'm an alcoholic, and this coming Saturday is the gratitude breakfast at Bayside Presbyterian. I'm sorry. So it's always a good time to come out and have some fellowship. There's a lot of speakers.
Gratitude breakfast this Saturday, Bayside Presbyterian. It's on tidewaterintergroup.org. Anybody else? All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Look at you shiny people. There's literature available over there. If you can fold it, it's free. If you need a book, we'll make a deal. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I'll be available here behind this podium after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come talk to me. Or if you're shy or high, you can send an email to info@simpleactions.net as well, and someone will get back to you. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Did we provide one?
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, and stay well away from the church doors. All AA meeting recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. There will be no meeting after the meeting. Mark, would you come read the last couple of paragraphs on page 164? My brother. You, man.
Hi, everybody. My name is Mark, alcoholic. Hello. All right. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. we shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely trust the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thanks, Lemire.
Thank you, Mark. After the, go ahead. That was like a true smattering. After the Lord's Prayer, please feel free to thank Jim all the way down here to share with us. And can we give him another hand?